I don't know that any political party is always together lockstep in everything. To start, at least, we have our own ideas and we bring them forward as a party, and candidates run against each other. That's part of our system. But at the end of the day, we are stepping forward as a caucus. We have been united on the property tax relief issue, where we all strongly believe that property tax relief is needed in Illinois. Now, how we all go about, you know, or think the best way of getting there may differ a little bit, but we are all working towards that goal. And trust me, if someone's making some headway on it, I am certain we'll get everyone working together to advance that, because we truly just want property tax relief for the people of Illinois. We want what's in the best interest of the people of Illinois, which is providing opportunity to them so that they can go about living their lives free and do what they do best, which is just make Illinois a wonderful place to be.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Heartland Politics podcast and show, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and as some of you may be aware, the Illinois General Assembly is moving towards its coming adjournment with some hopefully key topics that they're addressing on issues that are of concern us, the citizens of this state. I wanted to reach out to a legislator and just take the pulse and see what's going on. I'm going to introduce my listeners to Dan Ugasta. You probably haven't heard of Dan, but he's from the western suburbs of Chicago, House District 65. He was thinking about a race for governor, but he's also the assistant minority leader, and I think it's fair to say a rising star in Republican politics in Illinois. I've met him a couple times, and it's really a pleasure to have him on the show. Representative, thank you for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me, Robin. Greatly appreciate the invite and the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Well, we've got some really big issues facing the state. What's occupying your time? What are the big issues down there that the legislature's grappling with?
You know, we have a lot going on. Last week, when we thought it was going to be a very quiet week, we had a few things come up that we weren't quite anticipating by way of a couple of constitutional amendments. Only one was actually acted upon. One would have been a tax increase that would have been put into the Constitution. The other one, of course, has to do with redistricting. That was the one that was acted upon, and that took a lot of time over the last few weeks, and is still occupying a bit of our time. The other one that came up this past week was the mega projects bill, which is also tied into the Bears Stadium, and that was a significant amount of time, as well as we saw what was finally being put forward in a document and having to come up to speed and get forth our concerns and various things. We ended up having a vote on it. It passed. It's over in the Senate, as you know. We're waiting to see if it's going to hit. Coming up in the next month or so, we have, of course, the budget, which is always the big item for the state every year at the end of May. It's always taken care of at that point. But there's a few other bills that are coming up dealing with unemployment insurance, as well as workers' compensation that could possibly be, you know, some big, big items before the state as well.
Through some of these, and as our listeners know, the Republicans are in the minority in the Illinois State House and Senate, and we'll talk about that a little bit later too. But this Bears Stadium fan, now look, no, there's no bigger Chicago Bears fan than me. They're just getting good. I mean, a couple of years ago, I would have said go based on how poorly they were doing. But the big concern I hear here from normal people, working people, middle class people, you know, they want the Bears to stay, but like me, they don't want state tax dollars going to subsidize it, because it's seen as subsidizing millionaires, billionaires, whatever. Will there be some state tax dollars involved, or is it going to be local, or what? What's based on how the bill is right now?
So the bill as it is right now, does not require any tax dollars from the people of the state of Illinois. What the bill does is it allows a mega project, be it the Bears Stadium or anything else built in Illinois, over a certain amount of money. It's $100 million is the lowest bar, and it goes up. And there's a few different changes as you progress in value. But it allows them to negotiate with local taxing districts on how they would pay taxes. So the local taxing district would ultimately be the one to have the say on whether or not to give any type of tax break or tax certainty, let's say, to the mega project. In the instance of a Bears stadium, though, think about it this way. It's a stadium they're looking to build. It's costing a couple billion dollars. They're going to finance that privately. The school district is going to reap benefit from any increased value of that property. It's just where that amount lands is the question. And yet the school district has to provide zero in additional services. So, this is trying to help them. We as a group, as Republicans, are very, very much in favor of lowering taxes in the state. Property tax relief is huge on our agenda. And we, as a group, many of us put out there that if they want our votes for this, we need to provide not just property tax relief and certainty for these mega projects, which we would like to have in our state, but also for every property taxpayer within the state. So there's that part of it too. And there was a little bit of that incorporated. We could get into details if you want. Not quite what I was looking for, I can tell you that. But anyhow, there's no costs there. Now, the Bears are asking the state to also help with some infrastructure costs if they build the stadium going forward. That was not part of that bill. No vote was taken on that yet, so we'd have to see yet what that looks like. Somewhat of a reasonable expectation, though, to expect infrastructure to be built. That's what the state does provide for, government does provide for. And, you know, to me, nothing special, but if we need improvements, upgrades, and expansions, that seems reasonable, too, as it might be for any business or development going in that you would assist with things like that.
You just, I am interested a little bit for our listeners' sake on what they could, what if you could write this bill magically and make it law, what kind of property tax reform would people see? Would they be able to see, because, you know, property taxes are more affected by local governments, but how could the state come in and limit that growth or reduce it, or what would be the best way in your view to do that?
So I personally have four property tax relief bills, and I'd be happy to throw any of them into that mix of an equation. One would have to do with bond rollovers. They're called backdoor automatic rollovers. So you don't get to just roll over a bond automatically at the end of its life. Once a bond is paid and has expired, if a local taxing district wants that money again, they have to go back to the voters on a referendum. They can't just re-up the bonds, which is what's currently happening. That would be property tax relief. Putting referendums on the November ballot instead of allowing them to pass during consolidated elections or primary elections, when most of the electorate is engaged, the voters are engaged in paying attention so that we actually get what the people of the area think about these referendums instead of sort of in the, you know, quiet of these smaller elections, passing them at that time. As well as I have one that would, once a taxing district, and we're working on amendments for it right now, but once a taxing district has so much in reserves over and above their levies and other revenue streams, would have to reimburse the property taxpayers or the taxpayers of the area by way of just paying back their money because they have too much they're sitting on. And then the last one is the biggest one. That's House Bill number 9, which would actually provide significant property tax relief for people throughout Illinois. When I first filed it a couple years ago, the 21-year property tax relief or the property tax relief that would have been granted over that 21 years would have been about $82.4 billion, I want to say, over the 21-year period. This last year alone, it would have been about $3.5 billion. And it's actual property tax relief to each and every property taxpayer in Illinois.
I had to smile when you talked about the referendum issue because I'm a former city official and we can be pretty sneaky about that stuff sometimes. So, but yeah, that I hear officials talk about that all the time. Are there chances of passing a local tax increase, property tax increase better when more people vote or fewer? So your bill addresses that. And it's just some ways, I think, to address this issue, because I think if there's one constant out here, probably around the entire state, property taxes are too high in this state. And so Dan's just shared with our listeners some ideas he has for addressing that. And hopefully if this bill passes, there's some type of help in it for everybody and not just the Bears and some of these mega projects. I wanted to get back into another topic you mentioned, and that's the budget. It sounds like we still hear different things based on who's looking at it, Democrats or Republicans. You know, we went through COVID, a lot of money was gone through. The states had debt issues, pension issues. How is the budget right now from your standpoint?
I think it's a bit top heavy. We are spending right now almost 40% more than we were when I came into office. And that, well, is far ahead of where inflation is. So that can't account for all of it. We are spending about $56 billion a year. When I first came in 2019, it was only $40 billion. I think we need to scale back. Unfortunately, taxes have been increased on a number of occasions since I've been in. The last 2 years, almost $1 billion each year. A lot of that has been on businesses and other types of betting. But end of the day, it's always the people of the state of Illinois that end up paying those taxes. Business owners, if they get taxed more, oftentimes, almost always, will pass that along to their customers somehow.
You also mentioned the constitutional amendments, and I want to get to one. You said that there was this millionaire's tax idea that was proposed. Where does that stand? Did that make it, or did that fail? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the amendment was never even brought to a vote in the House, and we're done for the rest of the week, and it would have to be passed by May 3rd in order to go on the ballot for this November. So it is done for this election cycle. It's officially dead. My thoughts on it are we don't need more tax money. And even if they're talking about using it for property tax relief, I just gave you four ideas for property tax relief that doesn't include increasing a tax on a single individual in the state of Illinois. There are ways to get it done without taxing other people to do it. And also, I'm against it because when you tax millionaires, what they end up doing is they end up leaving the state oftentimes, whether it's physically or setting up residence in another state. So not only now are we not going to realize any increased tax revenue from the additional tax we put on them, but we just lost the revenue stream that they were originally bringing to the state. I've heard estimates, and I have yet to be able to confirm them, but I've heard estimates that since Citadel has left and Ken Griffin, you know, along with the people he took with him because that's where he moved his headquarters, we probably lost about $200 million in revenue to the state. That's a lot of money, not counting what Ken Griffin gave in philanthropy throughout the state, especially the Chicago region. I would see articles about millions of dollars he was giving away every year.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest today State Representative Dan Ugaste in Illinois. This district is the 65th district. If you're familiar with the western suburbs, a couple towns that are in his district include Geneva and St. Charles. Up that way, a ways away from the city. He is assistant minority leader, and we've been talking a little bit about some of the major items in front of the Illinois General Assembly as it head towards its adjournment here in about a little over a month. coming up. I want to turn to some more political type issues, and one is gerrymandering. I think listeners know my feeling. I think gerrymandering is really hurting the United States, whether it's done by Democratic states or Republican states. We're seeing this play out across the country right now in Virginia. Now Florida came out with a proposal to help. You know, Illinois is heavily Democratic. They passed this. What was the gerrymandering constitutional amendment about, and is it a good idea?
Well, first of all, I'm dead set against gerrymandering anywhere in the country. I think it's a bad idea across the board, and I'm hoping at some point very soon the United States Supreme Court comes, steps up and looks at their old decision and says, you know what, that may have worked at the time. Things are far different now. Gerrymandering can't be allowed anymore because legislators are truly picking their voters, and voters are not having the opportunity to select their legislators. And that's just wrong, no matter which side's doing it. What was brought up was an amendment to our Constitution. Our Constitution is always, or is read since 1970, that all our legislative and representative districts, so that's Senate, Illinois State Senate and Illinois House districts, must be of equal size, compact, and contiguous. This would maintain those requirements, except it would set a priority list, and it would throw in two other requirements somewhat based on race and equal opportunity for representation that included race, and made those priorities above being contiguous and above compactness. And when you don't have compactness as part of your requirement, what that allows are communities such as St. Charles, Geneva, your communities out there in the Quad Cities to be carved up into small pieces and no longer have a voice as a community. I mean, we live near the people we live near. Oftentimes we share many, if not all, and not never all, I guess, but many of the same beliefs and priorities. And by allowing this, it would allow them to be carved up further, and the compactness may not even matter anymore because, one, it's the last on the priority list of what would be deemed needed or what would pass as constitutional muster before the Illinois Supreme Court. But also it says, if even practicable, to keep them compact. There's not even really a requirement left anymore in this amendment. So basically all this is doing is under some window dressing, I believe, because I believe Illinois voters elect the best people regardless of race, religion, gender. They look past that. They're looking for the best people. I trust the voters of this state to do the right thing, and I think we all should, and allow them to vote for who it is they actually want, not representatives picking their voters, which is what this would basically allow. It would just allow gerrymandering to the nth degree. And in all honesty, it's being done in response to a lawsuit we brought just last year, which the Illinois Supreme Court dismissed on a technicality of it being not timely, that pointed out just how badly gerrymandered our state already is and wouldn't even pass our current constitutional requirements.
For our listeners, and again, I want to explain this. I mean, I don't throw my opinions out there much in this show, but this is one I feel strongly about. We've got this hyper-partisanship right now where each side is disliking the other more and more. Negative partisanship is what we political scientists call it. But if you can't sit down and talk to somebody you disagree with, we're in trouble. And I think the key is to get people, any type of legislator, to go out and work in areas where they have to get votes from the other side. Will help our democracy in the long run. And that's why I'm very passionate about this. And so I appreciate your comments on it. This has led to the Republicans in Illinois, of course, being in the minority in both houses, and you're a leader. And this goes with the Democrats in Iowa as well, where the Republicans control everything. But, and I'm still, I guess, again, I believe in our democracy that We need a strong two-party system. The Republicans have struggled lately with its internal divisions. But as a leader, what are you seeing as far as the path back for the Republican Party in Illinois? I know it's going to take some time and be difficult. It can happen. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Republicans won the governor's office 18 straight years. But what are the steps that your party needs to take?
Well, I'm old enough to remember all that too, and I remain very hopeful. It's why I stay doing this. I think we need to just keep on getting the word out and keep working the way we are working. Illinois is much more 50-50 than people believe. It truly is a purple state. It may be slightly more Democrat than Republican, but it's not by anywhere near the majorities that they have in the House and Senate. We are in super minorities in both these chambers, and that's just not reflective of who we are. So I think we keep working as we have been, getting our message out, working on things like property tax relief for the taxpayers. That's going our work on this time around. You know, this wasn't even part of this mega projects bill until we made it part of it. We put it out there. We said this needs to be in the bill if you want to see votes. And boom, next thing you know, the Democrats are talking about it. And they're at least working on it. Now, is it where I think it needs to be? No. But are they at least working on it? Yes. So we're getting there. And once people realize that we are the ones putting forth these ideas, we are the ones trying to bring fairness. And like you said, where everyone's sitting down and working together to bring forward the best ideas. We have to sit down and work together. If either party thinks they have the answer to everything, I think they're absolutely wrong. We come out with the best ideas when we work together. Now, it may not be 50-50 on a compromise. It may be more one way than another on certain situations, but we all need to hear each other because, look, I don't understand everything that goes on in other parts of the state, nor does everyone understand what's happening in my part of the state. So we need to be able to talk. And when we do work together, that's when we'll end up with the best results for the state. I think the people are going to continue to see that. We will slowly chip away. We didn't end up in this situation overnight. We're not going to overturn it overnight. As much as I might like to, I know it's not going to happen that way.
I want to address a primary race that we had right out here in our listening area. I had both candidates on my show, Noreen Hammond, who was a fellow assistant minority leader, and Josh Higgins. Josh beat her pretty badly in this district, and it was kind of an ugly race, negative attacks, all that. So, I mean, the Democrats have their internal divisions. Republicans have theirs. Is property tax reform the type of issue you think you can bring in some of the members that are part of, like, the Freedom Caucus, things like that? Bring them together. I mean, how much of a challenge is that in kind of unifying the caucus?
Well, look, I don't know that any political party is always together lockstep in everything. To start, at least, we have our own ideas and we bring them forward as a party, and candidates run against each other. That's part of our system. But at the end of the day, we are stepping forward as a caucus. We have been united on the property tax relief issue, where we all strongly believe that property tax relief is needed in Illinois. Now, how we all go about, you know, or think the best way of getting there may differ a little bit, but we are all working towards that goal. And trust me, if someone's making some headway on it, I am certain we'll get everyone working together to advance that, because we truly just want property tax relief for the people of Illinois. We want what's in the best interest of the people of Illinois, which is providing opportunity to them so that they can go about living their lives free and do what they do best, which is just make Illinois a wonderful place to be.
I want to get back to a couple policy issues before we end. And again, for our listeners, Dan, as the minority party, doesn't really control the agenda. But when you mentioned the big issues the legislature's facing, I didn't hear one that I hear from everybody. If you go out and do any type of just asking people what's on their minds right now, it's utility costs, gas prices, all these energy costs bundled up. It sounds like that's not a topic that the General Assembly's addressing. Or are they? I mean, it doesn't sound like one that's in the headlines. I haven't seen it. Is anything going on to address this? I mean, I hear people saying, you know, their utility power bills are as high as a car payment right now.
You know, unfortunately, I wish I could tell you something was. It's something that's front of our agenda that we at the top, near the top of our agenda that we would like to see done, because we are having great problems in this state with our utility costs. Electric costs especially are really up there right now. And it's unfortunately of the state's own creating. We don't have to be in this situation. We as a General Assembly, and when I say we, talking primarily the supermajority Democrats, put in place some policies that have hurt us greatly, because we have generators shutting down all the time, as well as the fact that we weren't able to build new nuclear reactors when all that was happening. We extended the life of a few, thank God, but did not allow them to be built for a number of years after. We allowed small modular about 2 years ago, and the governor vetoed that bill that would have also allowed larger ones to be built. We passed it again this past year, to allow larger nuclear reactors to be built again. The governor finally signed off on it. But, you know, it came with other costs, too, that are going to keep increasing our utility bills. And that's just not the way to do things. So am I hearing any talk about any energy bills? I've heard a few rumblings. I wouldn't say I'm definitely hearing of anything moving, but also the ones I've been hearing rumblings about, I'm not certain they're going to provide actual relief, because it seems like for every step of relief that's tied in, like the ability to build new nuclear plants here in Illinois, there's more piled onto it that just makes it more costly. And that's what I'm hearing some rumblings about happening again. So I'm hopeful nothing like that happens. I really do want, as a number of people do, for us to address the utility rate issue. We can do it easily. It's just we take an all-in approach, work towards the cleanest energy we can. We have some pretty good environmental requirements here in Illinois. And you know what? We could take care of this problem. I spoke about this on the House floor just a week or so ago, because we're losing a generation in this state. It's being shipped down to Texas a piece at a time that's equivalent to a nuclear reactor. And that's just the wrong way to go.
Question. Dan, this is Illinois, so I've always got to ask about ethics. It seems like we just don't do enough. Headline just the other day, former Speaker Madigan lost an appeal. In 30 seconds, will there be any types of major ethics legislation building on past efforts? And if not, what's an idea that they should pass?
So I've been in the General Assembly 8 years. I hold out very little hope we're going to have any serious major ethics reform, because we don't control the agenda, like you said. Our party's firmly in favor of it. What I would pass, I would start with ending the revolving door between the General Assembly and lobbyists. We have a six-month window that has some loopholes in it. I would make it at least a two-year window, if not three-year window. And that's just one item. There's a lot more.
Okay, thank you very much for being on today. State Representative Dan Ugasti, who's Assistant Minority Leader, Republican in Illinois from the 65th District in the Western Suburbs. Dan was first elected in 2018. And I think it's fair to say, again, a rising star in the Republican Party in Illinois. And for our listeners, again, Republicans in their minority, but it doesn't mean it's forever. I'm old enough to remember when the Democrats were in the wilderness. So we'll see what happens. But again, Dan, I know it's a very busy time. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.